Explaining Explainability. In this podcast, we bring together the different disciplines of the Collaborative Research Center Constructing Explainability. Two researchers discuss a concept around explainability from their point of view, moderated by Professor Britta Wrede.
Welcome to this episode of our podcast. My name is Britta Wrede. I am head of the Medical Assistive Systems Group at the Medical School OVL at Bielefeld University, and I am project investigator of the Public Relations Project. So imagine a care robot learning how to lift a patient out of bed, not by programming, but directly from the interaction with the carer. So how is this even possible? And what does this have to do with children learning their first words? That's exactly what this episode is about, scaffolding. It's basically the art of supporting learners so that they can master complex tasks themselves. I would like to welcome two experts on this exciting topic, Dr. Angela Grimminger, a linguist at Paderborn University, and Professor Anna-Lisa Vollmer, who is researching how robots can learn through interaction with lay people at Bielefeld University.
Angela Grimminger is a senior researcher in the psycholinguistics group at the Faculty of Arts and Humanities at Paderborn University. Her research focuses on language and gesture development, child-robot interactions, and multimodal interaction. In the Collaborative Research Center, she co-leads the project AO2, Monitoring the Understanding of Explanations.
Hello, Angela.
Hello.
Anna-Lisa Vollmer is professor for interactive robotics in medicine and care at the Medical School Oswestfalen-Lippe and the Center for Cognitive Interaction Technology at Bielefeld University. Her research focuses on how robots can learn new tasks in interaction with laypersons. To this end, she investigates the cognitive basis of human teaching behavior and attempts to transfer these findings to human-robot interaction.
Hi.
So I'm very glad to have you here. And today we are talking about scaffolding. And not everybody probably knows what scaffolding actually means. And so my first question goes to you, Angela. Can you give a little explanation what scaffolding is?
So to begin with, the term scaffolding originally refers to the temporary support during construction work. So you put up a scaffold in order to build a house, for example. And in education and developmental psychological context, it has been used as a metaphor where you want to build knowledge or understanding or some competencies. Mm. It describes a special form of support in asymmetric interaction. Maybe that is or that is an important point.
What does this mean, asymmetric?
Yeah, it means that there is, if you think of two persons being involved in educational context, there is a more knowledgeable or more skilled person, and which is a teacher or a caregiver, and a less skilled or knowledgeable person, usually a child or a learner. And the goal is to increase task competency. So you want to reach, or via scaffolding, you want to bring the learner to become competent in a task that the learner wasn't competent before.
Yeah. I see. Okay. And so so this is something that parents do with their children, I assume. Mm-hmm. Are there specific moves or specific, I don't know, things that you can do for scaffolding? Or is it just, I explain, well, you do it like this? Or what is scaffolding in detail?
So in developmental research, you observe different forms of adaptive behavior from caregivers. Mm-hmm. So for example, caregivers or even older siblings adapt their way of speaking to the younger child, mm-hmm. with in terms of intonation, lexical, or the words you use, lexical words, simpler grammar. So you can adapt to the level of competence to the children, but you can also do it using nonverbal behavior, such as gestures, which, you know, are a visual way of also highlighting something or making something more prominent.
Okay. And are you also actually, so I guess it's not just verbal, right, as you just said, but you're also probably carrying out certain things. So you're playing around with blocks or something.
Mm-hmm. Demonstration is one aspect of scaffolding. there are other aspects as well. So originally, or the term comes from work by Jerome Bruner, a developmental psychologist, who investigated teacher-learner, young learner, two to 4 years old, building a kind of pyramid. And then they observed what the teachers actually did to help the learner actually complete this task. And they, should I say something about these?
Yes, okay. Why not? Go ahead.
So they observed that it is important, or in scaffolding, it is important to recruit interest and also to keep the child within the task, like the attention of the children. So behavior like, this is what we do now, please, you know, our task is to build that pyramid, for example. The second aspect is the reduction of degrees of freedom. So you simplify the task by maybe also taking some aspects out for a certain amount of time and just like focus on specific elements of the task. It also contains, or the third aspect is direction maintenance. So it is maintaining motivation, focus, and important, the goal of the task. So where do we want to come to? A fourth aspect is marking critical features. I guess also that also includes negations. So if you say this is important, but this is not important. So really distinguishing, or fifth out of six is frustration control, so emotional support also. And the last one, which you just asked, is demonstration. So you can model the expert way of doing things how to reach a path to the goal.
Okay, yeah, thanks. So that sounds actually like a very complex thing to do, but you just said that siblings sometimes do it as well. So is it something that it comes very natural to us, or do we have to learn it, or how is it happening in parent-child interactions?
I would say that in parent-child interaction, it is quite natural. It is it's just implicit behavior, or intuitive, maybe it's better, behavior. In the term or the notion of scaffolding has also been used in educational context, second language acquisition and so on, where it is more explicit and where you, I think also try to teach us how to be a good scaffolder. So what kind of techniques they can use, but then it's rather addressing a whole group of students or learners and not the individual child anymore.
So I read a paper recently. It was from Kathleen Corriveau, and she actually looked at the cognitive prerequisites that children actually need to scaffold. And it was very interesting. They said that you need the capacity to be able to model the other person, for example. Oh. I thought that was very interesting.
Yeah, that's interesting. So was that for a certain age? So you need a certain age in order to be able to model?
Yes.
Ah, okay, that's interesting. And so that might be, is that a difference also in education? Because you just said that when you talk to a group, to a class, then you will not model the individuals, right? Then you will probably have a more general idea of how to scaffold them. Whereas when we are in different situations in one-to-one, you might need this partner model.
I guess it is like that. So another important aspect is the zone of proximal development, which is related to it. So it describes the level of competence that a learner can reach with support. And you know that the learner is not able to reach without support. And The question is then, in a group of learners, does the teacher know the each individual zone of proximal development in a good way, or in a helpful way for the learners?
I see. Yeah, yeah. I can imagine that in a classroom, it might be, this is what you should be able to learn.
But, and the things you do to, come into the zone of proximal development is scaffolding. So that is, it is quite related to the individual you are trying to teach.
Yeah. Okay. So that sounds actually quite difficult. And so I'm wondering, Anna, so when you look at in the field of robotics, which is your research field, learning, I think, plays an important role, right, in robotics. But has scaffolding been considered also to be important? I mean, we hear it's so important for children. So how is it for robots?
So it's actually something which hasn't been considered in the classical approaches. So, for example, a big learning approach is imitation learning, for example, where actually it's a kind of similar idea. So the human trainer is teaching the robot and demonstrates an action, and the robot is supposed to copy that or to learn the action and be able to generalize afterwards. So it's a difficult problem, but at the moment it's more it has always classically more been a unidirectional transfer of knowledge. So you have the teacher showing something and the robot just understanding how it works without any possibilities to scaffold. So there are several things missing. So the first thing is that there are no possibilities. So the interaction is very restricted and the teacher does not have a lot of options to give input to the robot. So there's just one way of doing it, and it's defined by the researcher, basically, or the person that has implemented the robot. And the other thing is that also it is very difficult to understand where the robot is at a certain point.
I can imagine. So you have investigated how humans teach a robot, and even though it's so difficult to teach the robot, did you observe that they try to scaffold the robot?
Yes, they do actually try to do that. So usually you only have there is a loop, basically. So you have the teacher who teaches a certain action, and the robot will try to reproduce this movement or this task, and they try to monitor how the robot does that, and tend to take that to infer some kind of level of understanding or level of skill, and will try to scaffold the robot in attention, for example, but it's difficult if the robot does not react to that. So,
yes, I can imagine. Okay, so a robot is not so, so natural. And so how would a robot then react to scaffolding? So, I mean, we have heard that you can demonstrate, but you can also say, you can also negate, right? So you could show how not to do it. How would that work with classical approaches?
Well, the robot would just... So usually the robot does not have any behavior or feedback that that it gives to the teacher. So the robot would just basically stand there with a blank face, but does not have any eye gaze behavior, for example. So if you wanted to scaffold the attention, for example, then that would be difficult. So you need to implement that and have a reaction from the robot, basically.
Okay.
That also can be used to infer the knowledge of the robot.
I see.
But I wonder if attention is then important in the robot, because you could also say it's always attentive, and you don't have to, as a human teacher, you don't have to take care of, the attention aspect of scaffolding, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah, it depends, right? So I don't think that a robot is always able to follow everything that you want to show it.
Mm-hmm.
Especially if you use different modalities to teach it, then it's it might only focus on one, and maybe there are ways to show that it is actually paying attention to only one modality.
Yeah, I think that's an interesting point. I think that's also where we come to later, a little bit later, what is actually the role or the role of the explainee? What does the explainee have to do? Let me maybe switch one more time back to the scenario. So the scenario I have given, I think, is not so realistic. But Anna, you do have robots in certain scenarios, and so they work. So you have realistic scenarios. Could you just give us a short insight into what you are doing?
Yeah, so at the moment we have a robot, which is the Nao robot. It's a small humanoid robot in child clinics, basically. So, for example, in the child surgery ward. The robot is doing physiotherapy with the children that have like some kind of fractures, for example, or trauma. And it's for mobilization. So in that scenario, it is important that the robot is showing individual exercises to the patients. And so there could be the physiotherapist, for example, teaching the robot certain movements first before going into the therapy with the patients.
Wow, that's really interesting, because that's something that the robot could do. It could show certain exercises, and then you have the therapeut who could correct the robot when it's doing it's wrong. Okay, yeah. So that's really interesting and great to have such a scenario. Thank you very much. So this was the first phase, and we are now going actually to the context of explaining. And thank you for the first answers. We are now switching to the next phase. The TRR, we are actually investigating scaffolding, but more in the context actually of explanations. And is that a little bit different from the context of learning, where what we have just discussed? So is explaining a little bit different?
Yes, for several reasons, I would say. First, it is about understanding. So you want to understand, being enabled or comprehend. A concept or a task. It's not about learning, but maybe ultimately, but first, you know, it's about understanding. And the second difference is, I think, the question of asymmetry that we are thinking about. So are these interactions actually asymmetric, and in what sense? Because you have often two adults, and both come with some background knowledge also about your own knowledge and also your own goal. So I would say that the explainee is also, or that is what we in the TRR say, that explainee is also able to scaffold in terms for example, the goal that he or she wants to achieve. So it's not the explainer who knows the goal, it can also be the explainee, and maybe also the way that an explanation is given, the explanans, which can be shaped by the explainee, which I guess is different than the original notion.
So it means that the explainee actually has a very active role, and not only an active role, but also a guiding role, right? And so that sounds quite difficult to implement. And I again look at Anna, because she has the difficult task here. How do you try to address scaffolding in your research? So how do you want to use it?
So in our BO5 project in the TRR, we actually combine the robot learning with the explanation. So as I said, there's a lack of transparency in the robot that enables the human user to scaffold the robot. So we try to have two loops here. So that we have the training loop on the one hand for the task that the robot is learning, and on the other hand, we have an understanding loop for the human user. So that the robot is actually generating an explanation for the human to understand how the robot actually works and how it learns, such that the human understands better and can scaffold the robot better. So they they kind of interlink the two loops.
I see. And does that work? So in a way, I could imagine that humans who teach a robot who have no idea how the robot actually works and how the learning actually works. So do you see that the feedback of the robot can indeed help the human to understand a little bit better how the learning works?
I think so. So there are several things that go into this mental model that the human has about the robot, right? So there's of course all the experience that the person has with robots, but also the interaction itself overrides that a little bit. And then if we have these explanations, then actually we find that the mental model gets better, and also the learning will work better.
Okay, I see. And how, in a very concrete way, how did you realize that the humans sort of can maybe teach the robot better or can get a better understanding of the robot? I ask about the interface. So I think you have a very interesting interface that you have designed.
Yeah, so we have designed an interface to make it easier for the human to scaffold the robot. So we have so usually we have an interaction where the human is giving preferences for certain actions. So a robot will show two different movements and the human can choose, oh, is that one better or is that one better? I didn't like any of them. And that's very restricted, right? So that you cannot really have a scaffolding strategy for the robot. And so we tried to augment these possibilities and have several of them. So you can now show another demonstration, for example. You can make a save point and say, okay, I like that movement and I can revert back to that if I don't like where the learning is going, basically. Then I can do corrections and say, okay, I don't want to see that movement again, never, ever again. And also things like that. So I can speed up the movement, for example, and also increase the exploration rate of the robot that it does different things instead of only doing very similar movements.
Yeah, that's interesting. Have you also foreseen that the other way around, the robot can give more feedback than just the demonstration? So, for example, I didn't understand you, or I don't know where you want to go, or do you have something like that?
Yeah, so at the moment we have so this would be the explanation or the scaffolding from the robot in the understanding loop I was talking about. So here we have visualizations in augmented reality at the moment that are intended to show to the human at certain points, depending on what they choose on the interface, how the robot is working and where the robot is in the process.
Okay. Yeah. So that's that sounds really complex. Do you see if it's difficult, nevertheless, for the human teachers to teach the robot, or does that really facilitate them the teaching?
So that's actually the aim of our next study. So we will see.
Okay. So we wait for that.
Yeah.
And actually, this is actually probably to both of you. So in order to successfully co-construct, right, an explanation, I think prior knowledge plays an important role, both in a child but also in a robot, right? And so the explainer actually relies on the explainee to have some kind of prior knowledge. And how do you see it in parent-child interaction? How does the parent know that? Because the parent is familiar with the child and already knows what the child knows? Or does that come from the interaction?
I would say both. So, if it's a close caregiver, then for sure you know something about the skills or the maybe also preferences for certain types of input, but you also have, or the idea is also that you have that loop. So you, the caregiver is providing some input to the children and scaffold the children or the learner. But the learner gives feedback in the type of what is it sensitive, or what he or she is sensitive to, the level of readiness, it's sometimes called, so readiness to take the next steps. And based on that feedback and the ability to monitor that from the more knowledgeable person, you also have that loop.
Yeah, that's interesting. And yeah, Anna.
For a robot, then it gets more difficult because sometimes you have robots that look the same, but they don't at all have the same capabilities. So that becomes very, very difficult.
Yeah, for example, many people, so many universities, many groups, they have the Now robot.
Yeah.
And then often you see that people, or children actually, they like the Now, right? Mm-hmm. And then they expect probably from the last time they saw Now, oh, he played football or soccer. And then they don't understand, right, why it doesn't play soccer or something like that.
And I think that's a challenge. So if you have a anthropomorphized robot, then humans expect maybe similar, also feedback signals, for example, verbal, nonverbal gesture, whatever, if it's built like it's capable of it.
Yeah, and probably it's also very difficult to understand for children, but even for adults, when they face a robot, even for the first time, to just have an understanding what the robot can do at all, right?
Yes, exactly, yeah.
So, okay, so we have seen that the concept of scaffolding in explanations is a little bit different from what we have seen or learned from parent-child interactions. And so thank you for the insights here. And we will now want to go a step further and talk about, acceptance in robots in general and about the future. Anna, you work actually very closely with clinics and you have your robots there and you work with patients and doctors and staff and so on. How do you see the relationship here between these systems that are already in the clinic and the explainable AI that we have just talked about?
Yes, so there are two views, I would say. So the first one that comes to my mind is that in classical assistance systems, you have a support which is there on the long run. So it's always the same, and it does not really adapt to the capability of the human. So if the human is, for example, in rehabilitation, it would be important to fade the support. And this is what I would say is the difference in scaffolding, because there you have a tailored scaffold, which is, gradually taken away over time with the capabilities of the human.
I see. Yeah. And is this something that the assistive systems can already do, or would you say they don't?
They don't at the moment.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And Angela, how important would you say is this fading, especially also in the parent-child interaction?
Because it is very important, because you have, you want to reach maybe more independent task competency or competence. And therefore, one important aspect is what Anna just said, the fading. So I started with an original notion. You build a house and you need a scaffold in order to, build each floor onto each other. But once the house is there, you don't need the scaffold and you don't want the scaffold anymore because, it's done. And that's why you have to reduce the level of support, and if you want to call it scaffolding, otherwise it's a permanent assistance.
And is this also necessary for explanations for XAI?
Yes. We in the TRR also say that empowerment is very important. So the humans need to be empowered, and that is why they need explanations for. So they want, or they should understand what technical systems do, and that's why they need explanations. And so the explanations have to be that good or that qualitatively high that you actually reach that level of understanding that you are independently or more independently able to make decisions, come to informed consent and so forth.
And would you also, would you say that this also would increase like the acceptance of the systems? I ask this because I know that sometimes people do not want explanations, for example. I think that this is a new thing, but so what, isn't there also a danger? So on the one hand, right, I would expect that the acceptance should increase when I explain something, but it could also go the other way around, right? But that's not an, is that also an issue for scaffolding, or would you say that's actually not part of scaffolding? This question of I don't want to learn something, or I don't want you to teach me.
Well, I don't think it's a part of scaffolding per se, but it's I would say that it is something that the feedback would also convey, right? So if I don't want to have an explanation on something, then I will tell you probably that I need something else. And if the explanation is continuing, then we will figure out what it should be about.
Yeah, I wonder if you say I don't want an explanation, and we know that people don't always want explanations, whether then you have that goal of really becoming more competent or have a deeper understanding of something, or whether you just want, I just want to get it done. Mm-hmm. But then it is not scaffolding, and then you are not, you don't want to be scaffolded by an explanation, for example, I would say.
Hmm. But that's actually, I think that's an interesting insight for me also, to say that actually in order to be scaffolded, I need to want to be scaffolded, right? And of course, the teacher also needs to want to scaffold, but and that there can be explanations where no scaffolding takes place, and it could even be successful because I just want to get along. So I just want to continue with what I've been doing. I don't want to have a deep understanding or something. I just, in a sense, it would be some kind of enabledness, but maybe you don't have to scaffold me for that because it's too easy or something.
Then you could just say it's assistance. So is it, why should it be then scaffolding?
Yeah. Yeah, that's an interesting question. Okay, so I think this is an interesting final note, and actually also some thought for future research questions. And so thank you both for being here, for answering my questions, and looking very much forward to have you maybe here again. And also thank you for listening, and if you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe to our podcast and stay tuned.
Explaining explainability. Thank you for listening to this episode. If you have any questions about this topic, feel free to ask them in the comments. We look forward to welcoming you to our next episode.